Here. Good morning. My name is Tim Johnson. I'm the chair of this committee, and I now call this meeting to order on May the 14th. This is the regular meeting of the Investment Oversight and Audit Oversight Committees. And so we're starting at 10:32 in the morning. Except as provided by law, no action shall be taken on any item not appearing on today's agenda. The Oversight Committee encourages public participation. If you wish to speak on an agenda item, please do so during the general public comment period. Public comments may also be submitted electronically by emailing comments@cob.oc.gov. As a reminder, please be aware that there are microphones throughout the room to record the meeting, so please try to keep side conversations to a minimum. When you are speaking, please turn your microphone on. I just had to check to make sure mine was, and the red light indicates a live microphone, and speak directly into the microphone. Please set all cell phones to mute or vibrate during the duration of the meeting. Thank you, and I'll ask the Madam Clerk to call the roll, please.
Thank you. Please confirm your presence when I call your name. Tim Johnson.
Here.
Mark Willie.
Here.
Doug Chafee.
Here. Al Jabbar as alternate.
Katrina Foley. Michelle Aguirre.
Kim Engelby, here for Michelle.
Jason Schmidt.
Here.
Yvonne Rowden. Larry Himmel.
Here.
Dr. Stephen Bean.
Here.
Thank you, and noting for the record that we do have a quorum.
Excellent. So at this time, we will take public comments from any members of the public wishing to speak on any agenda item or any other topic under the subject matter of the committees. Are there any members of the public here today who would wish to speak? Please raise your hand now. All right, I'm not seeing any. And so at this time, committee members may also make announcements, comments, request information, give direction to staff, suggest future agenda items. Do any of my colleagues on the committees have any comments? Mr. Hamilton.
Yes, I just wanted to, and is it on?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to today thank Ide Bailey for a great collaborative partnership that we've had over the years. I think it's been 8 years, right? Something like that. So I know we're going to be working with you again in some capacity in the future. And so I wanted to thank Ide Bailey. David Showalter's here on behalf of Ide Bailey, and also introduce our new auditor from Crow, right? So, and it's, I don't know what the, should we do introductions like at the end? She can go around and say hi to everyone. That's probably the best thing. Or
introductions for the entire committee?
Just to say hi to everyone, or I think that she can just mingle at the end. That's the best
that's,
thing.
That's yeah. Perfect.
Okay.
All right. Excellent. Does anyone else have any comments? And Yvonne, I'm seeing that you're, maybe let's go ahead. Thank you.
Do we have comments at the end or just at the beginning? I don't see comments at the end. I did have a comment, so I could go now or I could wait till the end of the meeting, but I don't see that there's a comment at the end.
If you'd like to go now, that would be great.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Johnson, for allowing me to provide comments today. I wanted to inform the Oversight Committee that I provided a statement to the CFO on recent board actions. The board action taken last month to transfer 9 positions from the treasurer to the CEO are unlawful acts to dismantle the elected treasurer functions. These duties are mandated by voters and defined in law. These attempts to obstruct and unconstitutionally strip this office from carrying out duties that the elected treasurer mandated to do by the people of Orange County are in violation of law and fiduciary duties to the public. These staff positions and the other 8 positions deleted in this fiscal year and further denials to fill other key vacant positions are threatening the essential and proper functioning of the treasurers. They constitute unlawful interference with my ability to carry out treasurer's duties. These actions are creating significant waste and abuse of limited taxpayer funds. This is yet another in a long line and series of steps trying to co-opt the treasurer and reduce public oversight and transparency of operation, all while wasting public funds. After written disagreement of these actions by me, the county continues to deny the duly elected treasurer the resources to do what the voters elected me to do while committing waste of public funds. Thank you, Chair, for allowing me to make my comment.
Excellent. Thank you. Ms. Ingleby?
Thank you. Kim Ingleby, CFO for the County of Orange. I want to point out that government code provides that the Board of Supervisors may delegate the investment authority to the treasurer tax collector. And for 2025 and for 2026, the Board of Supervisors decided not to delegate that authority. So per the board direction, that function has fallen into the county executive office. So there were staff that were doing investment duties that were assigned to the treasurer tax collector's department, but she no longer had that authority. So on April 14th, we went to the Board of Supervisors to request approval for a reorganization to align then the investment function with the department that was providing the oversight. And so that was approved by the board on April 14th, and we are currently right now going through that transition. And since the authority has been with the county executive office, we have been providing then the investment overview for this department or for this committee here. So I wanted to make sure that was clear. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Anything, any other comments from my colleagues? All right. Excellent. After hearing none, we'll now move on to our agenda items for today. Madam Clerk, will you please read the first item? And Mr. Hamilton, your microphone is on right now, just as FYI.
Item one is new committee's members. Welcome and introduction.
Excellent. Thank you. We have a new committee member joining us today. I would like to introduce and welcome Jason Schmidt to the committees. Jason was appointed by Supervisor Janet Nguyen to represent the first district on the committees, in plural, because it is the two committees. And so welcome to our group, formally and informally. So I appreciate it. Thank you. Next item.
Item two is to approve the minutes of the February 5th, 2026 regular meeting of the committees.
All right. We're now going to entertain a motion to...
I move.
Thank you. Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition or abstention? Hearing none, motion carries. And thank you. And on to the next item on the Investment Oversight Committee, Madam Clerk.
Yes, item three is to receive and file the quarterly report on the county treasury and investments for quarter ended March 31st, 2026. And we have Dana Schultz, Chief Investment Officer, to present this item.
Good morning, committee members. Bear with me, I'm struggling through an illness I've been trying to kick for almost 3 weeks, so my voice may go in and out, but I will do my best. this presentation, you'll notice we did a revamp of our report. We were meeting internally and discussing that our previous presentation really kind of was almost a cut and paste from the monthly investment and the quarterly investment reports that you guys all have copies of. They're sent out. So we revamped this to try and focus more on a high level, not just be presenting information you may have already seen in the report, make it look more visual and aesthetically pleasing. And then trying to incorporate into this presentation, addressing items that may have come up in public discussion, and some kind of education and training pieces. So as we go through this, and this is our first time, you'll know it's drastically different. We appreciate any feedback that you guys have on the presentation. I just wanted to take a second to introduce my investment team. As Kim mentioned, we've been providing all the investment services. Those staff transitioned under the County Executive Office. So here with me, I have Yushi and Bill Hua, they are my investment officers. They are the brains behind the operation, primarily doing and initiating all of our trades, our analysis, and some of the other information I'm going to go in later. And then Brian Nguyen, he is my investment accounting and compliance manager. So he keeps us in check. excuse me. Going to the first slide, currently, and this is all as of March 31st, our investment portfolio was about $16 billion. We have 93% of that was all in government agency and U.S. Treasuries, 4% in medium-term notes, which are corporate bonds, which we started purchasing recently, 3% in our money market fund, and less than 0.5% in the local agency investment fund at the state. Currently, which is not normal, so schools might notice this, usually they're the bigger player in the pool, but for this report, the county actually took first place slightly. So we have 50.75% of the OCTP, and the schools have 49.25. I want to go over quickly the three primary objectives when doing public fund investment, and this is delineated in California Government Code Section 53600.5. And it is safety, liquidity, and yield, and in that order. And so this presentation is going to address those three objectives, how we're achieving it, and how great of a job I think my team is doing. So safety is the first priority, and it's to protect the principal to avoid significant losses. To do that, we make sure our investments are stable, they're low risk, and they're backed by reliable institutions or assets. What are we doing to support this? So on April 14th, Fitch Ratings affirmed our current rating, which is the highest possible fund quality and market sensitivity rating of AAAF S1. We have 92.6% of our securities in government-backed securities. That is one of the highest safeties because we all know, knock on wood, government is always going to be here. So they are very safe investments. The corporate bonds, we do thorough credit analysis. We, as I mentioned, just started purchasing those, and we are only doing those in very highly rated and stable entities, such as Apple or Walmart, which are some of my favorite things. So we will hopefully have them around for a long time. I'm going to go more into detail later on the diversification and the different types of bonds. This chart is showing a comparison year over year from March of last year to March of this year. We wanted to highlight that because I know there's been some public discussion on the change of our investments. There's been concerns addressed for how we are changing the mix of our investments, some claims that we are now investing in high-risk securities and instruments, and I wanted to address that we are not doing that and provide a little more context on that. So there's been some small shifts between U.S. Treasuries and government agencies. We look on that based on the yield, but both are very secure. It's just a shift from last year to this year of about 6%, but that fluctuates regularly. You will notice, and I will go over this in more detail in a later slide, that the shift between discount notes and bonds purchases to callable bonds has significantly changed. Our mix previously in 2025 was almost 98% was all discount notes and bonds. As of this point in time, we are currently about 50-50 when it comes to notes and callable bonds. Specifically on those callables, last year at this time, we had about 1.5% of our investments in callables, and we're currently at 35.6%. And then additionally, as I mentioned, we added medium-term notes and corporate bonds, and we have about 3.71% there. Sorry, hold on. Sorry. The second objective is liquidity. So this is measuring, thank you, the ease and speed that assets can be converted to cash without significant loss or value. This isn't much of a concern for us. We are a hold-to-maturity portfolio, so we do not actively invest. We're more passive investors. So when we purchase a bond, our intent is to hold it to maturity or a planned call date. I think it's been a couple years before we've, at least since we've ever been in a position where we've had to look at selling a bond. And then we have a high amount in our money market funds, and those are easily convertible cash. We can do that within one day. So we have sufficient liquidity. You'll see a chart here, and I'll go over the maturity matching later as well, but this depicts We currently, as required by government code, need to match all of our maturities to all of our known expenditures and liabilities for a minimum of 6 months. So the green is good. That shows that we have that at least through September of 2026. And on average, our expenditures that we need to, our liabilities we need to match run around $850 million a month. Give me 1 second, sorry. And then the third objective is yield. And yield is the return or growth potential of the investment, such as interest, dividends, or coupons, and it reflects how much the money can grow over time. So how does our yield hold up? As of March 31st, our net yield was 3.91%. One of the industry standards that we compare our yields to is the Treasury par yield curve, the 90-day T-bill. So we are at 3.91%, and the 90-day T-bill is at 3.7%. We'll go into that chart on the next slide. Fiscal year-to-date earnings that we've earned for the pool this year is $472.9 million. And then I, again, will cover the increase in the yield from the callable bonds on a later slide. So this is the chart I mentioned. In this chart, you'll see three lines, if you can see from there. The blue line is the 90-day T-bill. The green line is the two-year Treasury note. And the orange is our pool. As you can see, as we go out, our pool is outperforming both the 90-day and the two-year Treasury bond based on the switch in diversification investment strategy we've had over the past year. All right. We took feedback on people liking colors. Green is good. We got lots of green. So this is a very high level. We won't go over into too much detail all of the different compliance, but we're within our investment issuer maximum maturity limits. And all of our credit rating for our different purchases and securities are all within the compliance with the investment policy. There is orange on here. That's just because there are still some pending audits. We're working very closely on trying to get those caught up. Those are all detailed in the investment report on the compliance summary page. Currently, we have the annual compliance monitoring, which is the contracted to check the annual compliance that is pending right now with the Treasurer Tax Collector's Office. And then the annual June 30th, 2025, which will be under the purview of CEO, they're pending starting that until the 2024 audit is completed. There's one compliance incident that happened in March, and I will go over it on the next slide. So basically, we have a requirement per government code 53652 that any funds at a financial institution that is not covered by FDIC need to be collateralized. Northern Trust is our custodial bank, and they are a financial institution that falls under that. So because right now they are currently not collateralized, our policy is to not leave cash on deposit with Northern Trust. What happened on March 27th is a counterparty of ours that we were working on a trade with failed to deliver the security to Northern Trust. It happened very late in the day. If you're aware, we are working with banks and financial institutions that are on East Coast time. So our time limits to address items are very short, and there's very short turnaround. So what happened is we were notified of this failure to deliver very late in the day. There's multiple parties involved between the custodial bank, our staff, cash management, and the broker-dealers. And so we had a very short turnaround time to make sure all of that was worked out. And timing communications ended up with, by the time we were aware of it, trying to transfer that cash out of Northern Trust, we missed the cutoff date for our wires. So the cash was held. It was $37.9 million in custody of Northern Trust. We don't have normal concerns with it. Northern Trust, we've been doing business with them for very many years. They're very secure. However, because of the government code, it did create a compliance exception because they are not currently, our agreement with them is not currently collateralized. The root cause is our understanding with Northern Trust is they've been trying to get us to execute a document to collateralize those funds. We do everything in our due diligence to ensure that we don't run into this situation. And I think it's been years since we've ever ran into this, but stuff happens. We're all human. And like I said, we did everything in our due diligence to try to prevent this, but we could not. So what we've done to take corrective action with my staff, we're enhancing communication. I think they were already doing a fantastic job, but we're just making sure that we're on top of it. When we're coming up to those close deadlines, we're making sure we reach out and everything closes through. But there's just things that are out of our control. Our recommendation, because the Northern Trust contract is held by the Treasurer's Office, so we don't have control over that, is to sign the documents provided by Northern Trust to allow for the collateralization of the funds. So in the event this does occur in the future, we won't be out of compliance with the California government code. That was a more important one, so I'll pause if there's any questions on that one. Yes, Supervisor Foley. Sorry.
Through the chair. Okay. Who, other than the treasurer tax collector, has authority to sign these documents so that we can get this handled so we don't have this situation again? What person? Is it the CEO?
So currently on our authorized documents, I was on there as the assistant treasurer tax collector, but we are not the holder of the contract. We have been working with county council to try and determine authority because it is a contract that we believe is a shared responsibility between CEO and the treasurer tax collector. So that would be collaboration between the two parties. Sorry.
Okay, I'm going to ask county council who has authority to sign this contract and why isn't it signed yet?
As far as the why this is signed, I don't know. I don't have the background on that. But as far as the authority for the Northern Trust contract, that's held by the treasurer as part of her independent banking authority to sign contracts with depository and custodial contracts. That's this particular contract. I don't know, you know, perhaps we can explore if there are other contracts that the board has authority to enter into that could resolve this situation, but this particular contract, it is the treasurer's authority.
Okay, and so the CEO or CFO cannot step in the shoes of the treasurer tax collector to sign this contract?
That's correct. This particular contract.
Okay. Can the board direct that the treasurer tax collector sign the contract?
I would have some concerns with that, given that it falls within the treasurer's authority.
What are our remedies other than to have our money sitting and not being...
Well, perhaps work with the treasurer. I don't know the specifics of this particular issue. Perhaps there can be some collaboration and the treasurer would be agreeable to sign this particular document.
What's the reason not to sign it if it's a requirement?
I don't know. I don't have that information.
Can you look into it? Because you're our county council. You should be figuring out how do we fix this.
Yes.
Okay.
This is the first I've heard of this particular issue. But as far as
how
perhaps
is that
we can
possible?
Explore.
I'm sorry, but that doesn't seem like that would be possible. So can you please look into it? Because we can't really have this kind of thing happening.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
And Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I might suggest that since we've changed this methodology with the treasurer, what other issues might be out there where the treasurer has signing authority, but we've given the authority of the duty to the CEO? And can we do a search of what other items might, you know, since we've never been in this situation before, we need to know what the possible consequences are. And it's something that I would have thought that somebody would have, you know, as an oversight committee member, it's troubling to me that there might be others that we don't know about yet.
I would agree, and I support that request.
If I may add, Mark, so we've been working very closely with our staff, with the chief financial officer, so we have been providing all of that analysis. This is just a one-time scenario that we hadn't encountered, but there are other items that are bifurcated where they're shared systems, for example, our treasury management systems. So we are working, and this is part of the transition that Kim mentioned, on bifurcating those systems so that we don't run into this issue where we're inhibited to do our duties because we don't have authority to take the action needed. We have a very thorough analysis.
I think that we're in a position where, under the authority, they've decided to do it a different way. And I just think that we need to play chess and not checkers in determining what the legal ramifications are down the line. because it's not fair to you to end up in this situation when the CEO has put you in this position when that should have been resolved far earlier than this, is my thought.
Mr. Chairman, can I follow up? Thank you. Yeah, because the corrective action and the recommendations are really more about notice in case it happens again. That is inadequate as a corrective action. I think the corrective action needs to be, we need to get the document signed so that it does not happen again. And so if maybe I'll talk to the chairman about how do we facilitate getting the document signed, because this seems to be a operational item that I don't understand why anyone would withhold a signature so that we can properly manage our trades. Thank you.
Yes, Yvonne.
I was just curious if this incident resulted in any monetary loss.
So there were some impacts because there's, and this is where I said there's a lot of moving parts. Typically, if we have a failed trade, we move those monies back into either our depository or primarily our money market accounts. So there was an issue on timing that resulted in a short funding of the money market, but we worked with the money market entities to true that up. So it was more of an accounting adjustment. So while it incurred an expense because they were short funded, we also made up for that on the back end on the interest earned. So the net position was immaterial, and even the financial impact was, I think, $13,000, but we received that in interest. And I had one other point. Sorry. What am I forgetting?
In a failed trade, you get the
Yes. We got the interest from the point of the original settlement. Darn it. And then I lost it. Sorry, guys. I've been struggling with sleeping and everything. The other item I was going to bring up is, because this is more of an accounting function, it did not result in any additional compliance exceptions. All of our compliance exceptions and audits are reviewed for our compliance with California government code and the investment policy. And so the issue with the money market did not trigger a compliance exception.
That's kind of a silly question, but someone actually just asked the treasurer collector to sign this?
Our understanding from Northern Trust is they've been attempting to get this in place for a matter of years.
In place in a matter of years?
But yes, they've been attempting to get it signed for repeatedly and even more recently, but I don't feel that we should speak on that. I'd like to defer to the treasurer for that.
And we're not allowed to ask the treasurer, Chair.
No, I think we can.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. If this has been going on several years, what was...
Thank you again through Chair Johnson for an opportunity to provide some factual information on this. First, the depository and wiring function is the banker side of the treasurer's duties. So disbursements that are to go out are the responsibility of the treasurer to do any wiring of funds. In most cases, the law provides that before I can wire funds, the auditor controller must approve those funds to see that they've been audited, they've been reviewed, the board has approved those. However, in the making of legal investments, the law provides for the treasurer to make disbursements for investment trades as part of the mandated state law. So this incident is 100% a compliance incident under my responsibility as the treasurer. I was notified of this incident just last week, and this incident occurred on March 27th.
I think the question is, though, Sherry, how come you're not signing the document? That's all we want to know. What's the reason not to sign the document so that we don't have these kinds of incidents?
Thank you, Honorable Foley. I am not aware that I have not had any communications with Northern Trust asking me to sign a document. Okay. It is not something that I am aware of at all.
If the document today, you would sign it?
It's a collateralization document. I sign it with Wells Fargo. Our policy is that normally we don't leave funds here. I'm happy to go through and make sure that we have those safekeepings. I do believe that in this case, there was a substantial amount of time between when the trade failed and when the trade was the next trade was made. So it was our responsibility to deliver those funds. And I, even though I was not aware of the detail, it was my staff who were performing it. I take full responsibility for the fact that the wire did not go out timely. The trade was made apparently to from Northern Trust to invest the money in theirs at 2:35. The deadline was at 2:30. I'm still reviewing all of the details
of it. Okay, Madam Treasurer, I think the issue is really just a simple one. Without going into all of that, we just want you to work with County Council and get the document signed.
I don't need to work with County Council. I need the custodian is my. I will reach out to them immediately after this meeting. It's not something that I'm aware of that has been sitting on anyone's desk. I have a good relationship with them. And this is another part of the co-opting of trying to use my opportunity to do my duties with obstructing that ability. So yes, I will reach out.
If we could get copies of all the communications regarding this item, that'd be appreciated as well. Thank you.
We'll do that.
So you were only aware of this a week ago?
It was probably a week or a week and a half ago when I received the an email from my staff. He sent me the draft. I produce a March 31st report. And in that, there was some information at the bottom that I had missed when I looked at it. And yes, I just received it recently. It was certainly well after the incident occurred.
My understanding is it was provided on April 23rd or the 26th, I believe.
Sooner?
I was aware of the same time. And so we prepared the due diligence and then we sent it with.
So
we were
aware of it the day it happened.
Yes.
We had to do our research to make sure that there was no exception in the code.
Right.
Custodian and to gather the facts that was then communicated up the chain within a week.
Yeah.
And did you walk over and talk to Madam Treasurer?
There's not a reporting responsibility here anymore or reporting nexus. And so the Director of Treasury that was informed was the person that notified her of the incident. And that was on the cash management side of the House, the Treasury side.
Mr. Chairman, my suggestion is that we would ask for an item to come to the next meeting where it appears our county council wasn't aware of this. It appears there's communication issues. And believe me, in my firm, I can understand how you have communication issues. So I think we should maybe have a report about that and maybe how we make sure that that communication gets a little better would be my suggestion.
Yeah, I would concur with that. So if we could take steps to do that, and as Dr. Bean had said, I heard him say, is, you know, if it's not required, there should be some collaboration, even if it's, and so.
Well, it's a little bit more complicated than that. So I think that's, it's not as simple as that. So, but the bottom line from my perspective is that we need to get to the bottom of why the document's not being signed. And so I would like copies of all the communications from the bank that relate to this contract. And then we need to get the contract signed so that we don't have something like this happen again. And that seems to be like the simplest solution to the problem, given that the communication issue is maybe not as simple to solve.
Yeah, and
I appreciate that, but that might just be addressing the symptom rather than the root cause. I'd like to get down to the root cause of why there would be miscommunication.
Right. Well, that is because of a hostile work environment. Do you want to go into that?
No,
okay.
Definitely.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Mr. Hamilton, I think you had a question or a comment.
And maybe in addition to that, a kind of maybe brief synopsis. You know, I'm sure it's a DVP account, right? And was this a problem with the broker not delivering the security? It sounds like we delivered the cash. So just kind of an overview of some of those kind of details, if there's any money that was at risk or, you know, in essence, if the broker didn't deliver the instrument, right? Where was the money at risk? Was it, was it really their money that was at risk? Because we already delivered the money, this escrow. I'm not sure. I'm just kind of asking the questions.
Yeah, we'll prepare. This is perfect on our new format is talking about topics of interest to the committee, educational pieces. So on our next meeting, we'll provide a more in-depth analysis of all the facts. And then per your request, Supervisor Foley, we'll go ahead and gather all the documentation.
Yeah, and I don't want to dismiss an earlier comment by Member Willie that or Co-Chair Willie, in terms of like if this is just one item, but are there other items that you know would be in the same vein that you know need to be addressed you know before there's an issue, if we could address it beforehand.
I'll work with the Chief Financial Officer, and we can do a high level summary of the analysis we conducted and kind of the list on anything that still have kind of like that gray area between the two offices. Like she said, we're still in the transition. This is a very big change, and there's a lot of, Casey knows his staff have been, we've been meeting 2-3 times a day to try and get it done, but we'll definitely provide that to you guys.
So as part of our analysis, we identified the duties, the systems, the agreements. So we have that all documented, and now we're working through that. So by the next meeting, we should have the investment division on its own, and we can definitely report back at the next meeting as to what was done. We're also looking at all of the different access requirements for all the systems, and that we can also report on as well. And that's where this would be covered.
Is that process that you're going that you're speaking of, is that as a result of what happened in this incident, or has this been ongoing prior to?
Right. My earlier statement about the board not delegating treasurer tax collector, and so now part of the reorganization of that investment division under the county executive office, it's all part of that.
Okay, so would so was this an issue that was known like 6 months ago, type of, you know, this particular item, like it would have been on that like analysis that you're referring to?
Yes, it would have been part of that Northern Trust, the authorization to do the collateralization. We would have covered that. But remember, this is a timing issue, and I've consulted with our external consultants. This isn't a concern to us. It's not a concern to them. It's just a timing issue. It happens once in a while. But if we get the collateralization memo in place, then that just reduces it. It's just that one little piece was missing.
All right. And I'm going to show my lack of knowledge maybe about the overall issue here, but is this happening on a daily basis, that these trades are going on a daily, weekly basis? Just this one happened that it missed the cutoff. But this is a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday,
right,
everyday type issue, because we have, you know, things going on every day.
Yes.
It's just that this one item missed a cutoff, and there's not a collateralization agreement. And so this is not just a March 27th issue. This is an issue today. It's an issue yesterday and tomorrow.
It can be. Yes. So to address your question, we do trades daily and multiple trades. We could typically purchase in $50 million blocks. We have some smaller ones since we've been diversifying, but we do hundreds. Do we know off the top of your head how many trades we do in a year?
Almost 1,000. We do billions of dollars in trades in a year. And the custodian is where all the maturity, the cash.
Right, it's where it's held.
So the custodian, billions of dollars pass through the custodian daily.
Yes.
Based on daily activity.
So we can, when we bring back that information, give you some statistics on how many trades we do in a year. But like I mentioned, we do anywhere from 1, 2, 3 up to, I think we've done what, at high bill, maybe 10 or more trades. Daily.
From my point of view, I mean, the actual number isn't as important as just like, hey, this is a daily
right.
issue.
So I was just trying to put in context, because when you look at the number of trades, this is the first time it's happened in years, and we've done thousands and thousands of trades. So this truly is not a normal situation that we ran into. But like was mentioned, we don't have concerns. We don't have concerns with Northern Trust holding the funds. It's not likely that, you know, if they got held over, and the concerns with not being FDI insured or it being collateralized, if those are held and all of a sudden they go out of business, are we going to be out that money? Northern Trust, we've been working with them a long time. They're very established. That's not a concern. It's just the concern that we're not in compliance with the government code.
Excellent. Go ahead.
So can you tell us what other types of incidences you may anticipate? It could be like this. I will tell you, the Huntington Beach treasurer, in the last 15 plus years in Huntington Beach, that going back to every single report, we've never had a compliance issue report. Me, my predecessor before that, who is the treasurer tax day. So I just want to make sure that we don't have this again because it's a pretty big black mark.
Yeah. We haven't had compliance exceptions in a long time, several years. Not very concerning on some of those exceptions. Example of some of those sections we've discussed at this committee before was when there was a market watch downgrade, and the way the investment policy was written, even though they're very secure funds, it required a written approval from the treasurer for those trades. So there was no concerns with the safety, but we did end up revamping the investment policy and making adjustments to address that. I don't know if you have another example.
Several years before that, there would be times when, mostly during COVID, once or twice, we violated the money market fund.
Yeah.
Giving money in the money market funds instead of trades.
And that was an unprecedented time with COVID, as we all know, it's difficult with operations.
Just to be clear, I'm new to this too, but I just want to find out. So we're not getting penalized for this?
No.
County entity?
We are not. It's just, if there's a state law, we want to follow it. So that's just our concern.
Yes. I have a question about a different part of the report.
Is there any more on this particular area? I think
the only thing I would do is I would request two agenda items on the next on our next meeting. One would be a discussion of how this was resolved by the CEO's office, and additionally, a report on an overall review of the authority and legal authority and other documentation regarding the change, and make sure that we've gone through and crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's on change, where, you know, when the board makes the decision, and that's great, but we've got to now, the workers have to make sure that all the systems are working right. And I want a report that we've gone through that, thought through that, and legal has looked at it and said, yeah, this works. And so that would be my suggestion for next meeting.
Yeah, I agree with that.
We have those noted, and we'll make sure to do that.
100%. TTC, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I just want to clarify one comment the auditor controller made. He talked about this delivery versus payment. This is a very important part of the law. So the payment is never made unless delivery has been received. So with the custodial bank, public funds were never at risk of paying for something we did not receive. That is a basic premise of the law, delivery versus. So when the broker failed to deliver, the funds were at the custodial bank awaiting my authority as treasurer to disperse those. The team did not disperse those to the broker because there was no security delivered. So the funds remained at the bank and were uninvested. Our policy is that the funds there, because the trade fails at 12:30, that's their limit, we all the way up till 2:30 have the opportunity to transfer money from one bank, the custodial bank, to our depository bank, and that trade was not made within those timely 2 hours. So there is a loss of funds. There is no, we don't have an earning credit rate or anything at Northern Trust. We did not earn interest on the 37, whatever the dollars. I'm still working through the details, but the funds itself were not at risk. We did not transfer that to the Wells Fargo as we have in the past. And that is the responsibility of the treasurer to do that. And I take full responsibility for this. That was my responsibility once the trade was failed to work with my team of people, cash management, to transfer that. That did not happen. I'm working with them now to identify how we can look at those. The corrective actions, again, are really on my side of the house. But I wanted you to know that there was no risk to those public funds. They were in the bank. The compliance exception is that the law requires collateralization of 100% of public funds deposits, either with by a bank, and you have to have an agreement with the bank to collateralize those deposits. I've been here 15 years. This has only happened once. And the change was Northern Trust used to just sweep the funds, which is a normal bank function, at the end of the day. Several years ago, they instituted a new procedure, which I completely agreed with, to actually formalize this sweep, because they are not my depository bank. The depository bank sweeps those funds. The custodial bank basically is not where you leave any funds. We don't normally have these types of arrangements with them because they are not the holder of the depository. That's what a depository bank is, to hold the deposit of funds. A custodial bank is to hold securities. It is not there to hold cash. So there would be no need to have deposits there because they are not a depository bank. We certainly can work through the agreement to put this in as a safeguard, because this is the second time it has happened. But the first time is when it was the sweep account. Now we have a special procedure where the investments team has to go and place an order, which I completely agree with. It has to be approved. And then that order, once it's approved, comes to my office. Sorry. And in my office, we then would say, you've executed a trade. My role under law that doesn't require the auditor controller is to disperse those funds. And I would have dispersed those funds back to the depository bank. So we'll work through it. But I did want to let you know that there was no risk of the trade dollars, but we did lose dollars from what I can tell. And I will certainly provide my input back to the oversight committee, because I do think transparency. It sounds like there's two trades that are actually involved with this. One trade did have, apparently there was a requisition that went out. I'm looking into that, because that requisition is dispersing funds, and only the treasurer has the authority to disperse funds. So there could be other information that I'm providing to you on this, because I was not an approver on those unbudgeted funds that were sent to this money market fund. So okay. I just wanted to let you know that the details as I see them. Thank you.
Okay, excellent.
I just have one correction, and I just consulted with my staff to make sure my statement earlier was correct. We did receive interest on that. We were paid interest back to the settlement date, even though it did not settle until Monday, the March 30th. We still did receive interest on those funds.
Okay. We have too much, in my opinion, like back and forth, and he said, she said. And so who is responsible for... And this is a question maybe for County Council. Who is responsible for investigating this issue and preparing a memo to the Oversight Committee to advise us on a summary of what happened and what we need to do to prevent it from happening again, and whether or not there was any loss?
Yeah, thank you. I think it'd be appropriate to have both the treasurer as the, who holds the deposit, the custodial contract, and then also the investment team.
Well, that doesn't work because they're not objective. We need to have an objective. I mean, we need to have an objective third person to do this.
Supervisor, should we have the internal audit do that?
I don't know if they would be. I thought you were going to say it was you.
if I may, we may be able to ask our, we have an investment firm, an investment advisory firm we can consult with. Our consultants, Chandler Asset
Management.
Okay,
I'm going to ask that County Council, through the chair, that County Council investigate this issue, and whomever you decide or your superiors decide is the proper person or entity to do it, but that we get a report back at the next meeting along with these other requests that tells us what happened and what do we need to do to fix it if it hasn't already been fixed for the future, and then also explains to us whether or not we lost any value. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And then I did have a question.
Yes, unrelated. So, I think you had an item on another part of the part of the presentation.
Yes.
So go ahead.
So I've been asked, and I just want to make sure that I have an understanding. I've been asked about the increase in the callable bonds. And according to your report on page 3, we increased callable bonds from 1.47% in 2025 to 35.57% in 2026. I know you addressed it, but you didn't explain why.
I will go over that on my next slide.
Oh, okay.
If we're good to move on now.
Okay.
So, callable bonds.
Oh, that's your next item.
Yes, that's okay. That's my next
point. Well,
thank you for the introduction. So basically, I'm going to try to not get too in-depth, but if anything I say doesn't make sense for people that aren't involved, feel free to stop me. But high-level callable bonds basically allow an issuer to redeem debt prior to the maturity date. There are a lot of different types of bonds, but there's four main callable bonds. The first type is American or continuous callable bond, which basically allows a callable them to be called at any time after the initial call projection. So once you hit that mark, between that mark and the maturity, they can call it whenever they want to. That does not allow for good planning. Those are not the bonds that we're focused on. The second category is European. These are where we're focusing our main purchase on here. And the European bonds are callable on a single specific date. So they can only be called one time. We know exactly what that date will be. And where we're looking at our cash forecasting, matching our liabilities, my team, and we'll go over that in a later slide, forecast everything. So we have plans on forecasting if the maturities get called, if they go all the way to maturity, and it allows us to plan ahead for that. So there's no unknowns when we're in that situation other than is it going to be called on the callable date or the maturity date. And both of those dates we make sure align to our liabilities so we have sufficient cash flow. There's Bermudan callables, which are a series of predetermined call dates. We are not looking at those because, again, multiple call dates makes it a little bit more difficult to plan ahead. And then there's make whole callables. We do have some of these. Those are our corporate bonds, and they basically can be called earlier, but if done so, the issuer pays a very high premium. So it is a benefit to us. Of those bonds we've purchased, all of those callable dates are within 1 to 3 months of the actual maturity date. So it's very close, very easy to predict, and has a great benefit to us because not only are we earning higher than the Treasury yield by making those bonds, we have potential to earn even more if they do end up calling those.
Through the chair, can I just ask a clarifying question? When you say the American, European, Bermudan, are those the types of callable? It doesn't necessarily mean like the American, the underlying security is American, right? Or European or Bermudan.
Yes.
I can't even say it.
Bermudan.
Yeah. So is it the type of callable? Not the underlying security that like.
Yeah. It's the type. And I go into detail a little bit. And it's what I just discussed on how many times it can be called, if it's a certain date, all of the implications. What are the benefits of callable bonds? They have higher yields. So the ones we're looking at, we've done an analysis. And with those callable bonds, we've earned an average of between 20 to 40 basis points above Treasury par yield curves. So for example, financially, what does that mean? If we purchased a $50 million bond, which we do that almost daily, if not daily, over a year period, that would be an additional $100,000 to $200,000 in profit. And that's just on one $50 million bond. As we mentioned earlier, we purchase billions of dollars in funds every year. Are these safe? Yes, they are safe. So as I mentioned earlier, we are very cautious with what bonds we do purchase that are callable. Primarily, our largest part of our portfolio are those U.S. Treasuries and government agencies, and that funding is backed by the government. Our corporate, as I mentioned earlier, they're very strong credit ratings. We have a slate, which you'll see in the investment report we publish, of those that we would look at purchasing. I believe we have five in there, but primarily we've been working with Apple and Walmart, and as mentioned, they're very long-term established companies with very high credit ratings, and those are the ones that are call dates were within 1 to 3 months of maturity. Yes, Mark?
So Dana, let's look at this. I'm kind of an overall guy. So we're about $600 million a year in interest is what we normally make.
Yes.
Between $500 and $600 million a year in interest. And because we've moved 30% or 20% of our portfolio into these callable bonds, will we now make another $50 million a year or $100 million a year?
That's my next topic point.
Okay.
So, and that's
you should
the last
make it
section.
A bigger font if it's going to say 50 million.
I know, there's a lot
million.
Of information, sorry. So that's the last section here is how has this change in diversification benefited the county? We still remain focused on SLI. We're required by law to do that. We are making sure that our investments are safe, are liquid, and we're safely achieving return. We did an analysis, and based on this change in diversification, we are estimating between $34.2 million in additional funding if those bonds are all called, up to an additional $57.6 million coming into the pool if those maturities are held.
Quick question. So you've showed us the benefits. What are the risks of decreasing the discount notes and bonds to shift them then to an increase in callable bonds?
That's where the different types of bonds come into play. So if you start just purchasing
all
kinds of...
There's got to be some risk of callable bonds. What are they?
So that's depending upon the bonds, and that's why we're purchasing those that are more safe. And as I mentioned before, they have specific dates. Those dates, both the callable dates and the maturity dates, match up to our known liabilities. So in our opinion, there is no risk right now. The only thing that I think could factor in, and I have another slide on that coming up, would be interest rate risk. So obviously, if you have some of those that are held out longer and the market shifts, you have the risk of reinvestment if the all of a sudden the market starts increasing and interest rates skyrocket. But my team is constantly reviewing the FOMC meetings, economic data, watching the trends. And right now in the environment we're in, we don't feel that that's a risk. We've been in a declining interest rate market for quite some time, and there's expected future cuts.
Yes. Go ahead.
But don't you have reinvestment risk on both sides of the curve? Because if rates drop, let's say we had a 75 bips drop again this year, mm-hmm. These bonds would get called. And you would have to reinvest at 75 bips lower, which is going to cost us more than the $34 million.
And to address that, that's why our duration has increased. So typically our previous duration, we were about 0.75, 0.77 per year. We're now up to 1.5. So our duration has extended. But again, that's factoring in if those get called. We're just planning ahead for that. And then, as I said, we watch the interest rate, we watch the markets, and if we start to see talks of trends, then we'll reevaluate to see if we adjust our investment strategy.
So did you guys do a sensitivity analysis on both sides, and could we see it as a committee in terms of if interest rates go up or down in increments, what's that's going to look like for us in terms of net impact?
Yes, I have a slide later, too, on the different tools, and I'll go into that. And then when we go into that, if there's anything you guys want to see in more depth, we can let us know, and we'll mark that for future meetings.
Right, because the reinvestment risk is that, so as the rate, if rates drop, they're gonna call. They're going to call their bond because they can go borrow from someone else at a lower rate. But now we have cash that we have to reinvest, and we're going to get a lower rate at that point.
And we also do another scenario where we have a forecasting, which we can share at the next meeting, where if you look at our duration and where our maturities are maxed up, if everything gets called, it significantly brings everything in. So if those were all to be called, there's not a likelihood that the interest rates would go up that high. So we'd most likely reinvest again at the Treasury par yield curve.
Mr. Chairman. So I still am not understanding, why didn't we do this before? Because the question that I'm getting from the community is, why is it so different than it was last year? So I don't think I have an answer to that yet.
Well, I can thank you for that, Supervisor Foley, and your fellow board members. Okay. With the shift in the investment authority, we have a little bit more autonomy to exercise the full potential of our investment policy. And so those now decisions come up through me to the CFO and the CEO. So we're able to make more of those purchases.
And do you think...
An inverted
yield. I'm sorry, Ms. Engleby, we can't hear you. You have to turn on your microphone.
And I believe we also had different economic situations. We're kind of going back. So
there is that.
We had a special investment that additional cash came into the accounts. We had a lot of other factors as well.
Okay. And do you think that this approach is yielding us more revenue?
I do.
Okay.
I do. We have some higher consultants that always reaching out, like, why aren't you diversifying more? And so very happy for the steps that we've taken.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. This is the other slide I referenced. So there's a lot of different areas of risk. I'll go very high level over these. And then we have different mechanisms and measures in place to mitigate those risks. So I know we've discussed some of these before, so I'll go very high level. There's liquidity risk. And when that comes into play is when you have difficulty selling at fair market value. As I mentioned earlier, we're a hold to maturity investment portfolio, so that is not really a concern for us. There's credit risk, where it's a possibility if the issuer fails to make payments or repay principal. Again, we're making sure our investments are government-backed primarily. So there's not really a risk of the government not paying on their bonds. And then those 3.7% that we're doing in corporate is those high, like Walmart, high credit risk, high credit rated. Rating downgrade risk, there is an issue of rating downgrades in general when people are investing if the rating of a certain bond or company gets downgraded. Again, we're doing U.S. governments and treasuries. That's not a typical item. And those corporate bonds we're investing are established high-rated corporate bonds. The last section talks about interest, inflation, duration, and reinvestment risk, which I know we talked about that briefly. So it's just changes of impacting value of the bonds. It, again, typically a lot of those depend on if they're sold before maturity or if the market takes a drastic increase. I won't go into more detail on that because I know we didn't speak about that. And then the call risk, which we also went over. There's the risk for the call, but we've done forecasting and analysis to make sure we account for all of that. The mitigants. So we do cash flow liability matching, as I mentioned earlier. Every single day, our team works with the treasurer's office, their cash management staff. We work with all of the county departments and the schools to identify anticipated expenses, anticipated revenues. And we are every single day looking at those numbers and updating because that's what tells us how much money we believe we have available to invest. We also do a historical analysis. My team has gone back 20 years of interest rates, inflows, outflows, all of that's taken into consideration. So we have a very large historical trend that helps us in our decisions as well. Credit analysis and review. Every day, my team, I get my email between 6 and 6:30 from my team. They're going in, they're checking all the interest rate risk, they're checking credit, they're checking for downgraded every single time. And there's an email that's sent to our office every single day that lets us know if there's any issues. Almost every day, it's very rare. Something, I think the last time this came up was when there was a credit watch change, but almost every single day, there's no issues. Another great tool, I can't speak highly enough about my team and how great they are. As I mentioned before, we were reaffirmed by Fitch with the highest credit rating. What my team did based on working with Fitch is we've recreated the tool that Fitch uses to assign the credit ratings. We validate it based on our information, their historical trends. And so we now have a tool that allows us to know at any single point in time, if Fitch were to come in today and do an evaluation, what would our credit risk be or what would our credit rating be? And then it allows for us to forecast when we're looking at those scenarios, do we want to hold on the callable bonds? Do we want to decrease? Do we want to increase? We run different scenarios, plug that into the system, so that we make sure that whatever we're doing results in us staying at that highest rated. And then the last section talks about economic data, duration management, weekly wrap-up. The weekly wrap-up, we meet every single week with our team, with investments, with the county executive office, the cash management staff, to review how did the week go, what are the different economic factors that came up, what's coming up in the next week, and there's constant communication to ensure that we're all working collaboratively. And then peer and industry expert consultants. So our team works regularly with many of our peer counties. There are investment committee meetings, the impact committee, different meetings, and they've built great relationships where constant communication, hey, guys, what are you doing? Or we saw somebody did something different and we're sharing data and analysis so we can see, are there things that other counties are doing that could benefit the county? And then mentioned we have Chandler Asset Management. So they are hired investment consultants. So they provide different investment services for other county entities, other local agencies. And so we're constantly consulting with them as well. And then I have, if there's any other questions on the details of that, we have staff here available that are doing that daily. Or if there's something you'd like us to highlight at a future meeting, please let me know.
So through the chair, I think this is a great slide. Do you have a comprehensive list? I'm assuming this is not the comprehensive list of risks. Do you have a comprehensive list of risks?
Yes.
And the, in essence, mitigating controls, internal controls for your function?
Yeah, we can provide a exact, like a complete list of that. The tools are very, like if you look at our tools, these Excel sheets are massive with multiple tabs and everything. So if anybody ever, when we provide that list, you say, hey, I want to know more about how you guys do this, we can do that at a future presentation, kind of go over what we do.
Yeah, like I'm just thinking out loud, there's like compliance risk, kind of the topic we've had today, right? Yeah. There's also cash flow risk. I don't see that one up there. But anyway, it's, I think this is a really important slide for the committee. And I think we could even have an agenda item on this if the committee so desires. So,
all right, excellent. Anything else on this item? If not, I think we can go on to agenda item number four.
Item four is to receive update on the schedule held by the County Treasury for quarter ended March 31st, 2026. And we have Dana Schultz, Chief Investment Officer, to present this item.
Hello again. If you guys weren't tired of hearing me talk, this one will be much shorter. So this item is a report that's prepared by the Auditor Controller. This is under their purview, but they do the schedule of assets based on assets in the County Treasury. They'll go over this in more detail, and this is on a further agenda item for the Audit Oversight Committee, but we just wanted to touch upon it here. The County Treasury is what the schedule of assets reviews within that County Treasury. 99.92% of those assets are investment related, with only 0.08% being cash-related or non-investment-related items. This agenda item talks about the March 31st, 2026 report. That report has not been started yet. What happened is the March 2025 was completed on April 2nd. I don't believe that's been brought to the committee for receive and file, so that will most likely be agendized for the next meeting. And then the September 2025 and the December 2025 are both pending with the Treasurer Tax Collector's Office. So once we get all those caught up, then we'll go to the March 31st. But that's just a high-level overview. And if there's specific questions on that, I'm going to refer to Mr. Hamilton. Good.
I have to ask. I thought we were getting a report on the current.
So the supervisor.
We have a detailed transaction report from January 26 to March of 26. That's in our package.
So. No. So the detailed transaction that you're referencing, that's a report we provide on all of the investments that we make. What this item is this, the auditor controller per 26920 government code, your responsibility, they have to do a schedule of assets on funds held or assets held in the county treasury. So this report was just a normal standing agenda item, but that report has not been completed yet. So I probably shouldn't have been on the agenda.
We don't have a report.
We don't have this report. And then I provided the status. The March one of the prior year was just completed April 2nd. So that will be brought to the next committee meeting for receive and file. And then the September 2025 and the December 2025 are still pending.
Ms. Engelby, why are we delayed?
We're providing an update here at the IOC because Dr. V is not part of the AOC. And it's Ida National agenda. So you want to make sure that. So this is an update here, and then later on, item number 8 under the AOC, Auditor Control provide a similar update for their audits. That was the intention.
Just to clarify, we perform a review of the TTC's schedule.
Sorry. My apologies. Not an audit, a review.
Yeah.
Just a quick housekeeping items. So I know that sometimes our mics aren't always working, and I think it's because there's a limit on how many mics can be active at one time. And so we just have to make sure we're turning mics off to allow others to be active. So.
Okay. To the Vice Chair Foley's point, is there a reason why this isn't done the more detailed now when Dr. Bean is here so he can hear it also? Or maybe in the future we should do that?
No, I think that's what she said. They are providing it now because he's not part of the next meeting.
Right. So should we do item number 9?
Yeah.
So to address your question, because this report is not yet completed, typically it wouldn't have been agendized. If we are agendizing a report, we would have that report available. You guys would have copies of it and would be able to ask questions. It just happens that this report has not been completed yet.
Okay. Ms. Engleby, I think we are all confused right now. I'm confused. What is the report that is being provided here?
This is just an update on that. So when we combined the IOC with the AOC, we went through a lot of the prior.
I understand that. I'm not confused about that. It says right here, receive update on schedule of assets held by county treasury for quarter ended March 31st, 2026.
Yes.
That's the agenda item. Did we get this, other than what's in our packet, do you have anything else to report on that topic?
No.
Okay.
No. Typically, the quarter ending April 31st, 2026, we would have an update on the audit as it's in progress or what's happening with that. And we are behind as I think we're back to September of 2025 on doing those audits.
Okay.
So it's just an update.
Keep using the word audit.
Review.
The auditor controller said it's review. I think what, at least from my perspective, maybe everybody else knows what you're saying, but it seems like there's some confusion. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, I always have to be the one to make these statements because everyone will just sit here quietly while no one knows what you're talking about.
Item number nine, I think, is highly related to this item.
I don't think that's the problem, though.
Okay.
The problem is what they're saying, I believe, is that they don't have a report for item number 4 because the schedule of assets has not been completed.
And
so
started.
We are behind how many months or quarters?
We're pending back from July 1 to present.
Okay. Yeah. So whose shop is that in to finish that?
The two reports are pending with TTC. That have been created, and until those, and correct me if I'm wrong, until those are completed, Auditor Controller is not initiating the March 31st, 2026. To address the confusion, I think just with timing and trying to cross everything, it shouldn't have been agendized for March 31st because we don't have a report.
Okay.
It hasn't started. My suggestion to ensure we're discussing in this when Dr. Bean is present is we can make it more generic to just have a status update on pending audits or pending reviews, and then we can just give that high-level status and allow conversation to happen. And then those are really under the Audits Oversight Committee's purview, so those would be more detail in the later agenda.
But we can't talk about it then either because you don't have it done.
Right. Well, just in general, any.
Okay.
It's going to change every single time depending upon what's been completed and
okay.
Or not.
You guys are focused on that issue. That's not the problem. The problem is that we haven't completed the work. And so this item shouldn't even be on our agenda. It
yes.
should be listed as status update as to backlog of schedule of assets. Am I wrong? Is that?
That's my suggestion.
Okay.
I agree with you, Supervisor
okay.
Foley.
All right.
We'll,
so
we'll make
who
that note
drafts
for future
the agenda before it gets distributed?
It's a collaborative effort, and we did go back and forth on wording. We did not choose the right wording on this one.
Okay.
So we will coordinate
right, so
with
we
the
got to tighten
board.
This up because this meeting is running really long.
Agreed.
Because things are confusing. Okay, we have to tighten this up. Sorry to be so direct, but none of us have a lot of extra time. So
okay.
We appreciate the feedback. We want to make it easier
okay.
for everybody. So.
And I believe TTC, you would like to address.
Chair Johnson, I'll try to keep my remarks brief. Consistent with my remarks at the prior oversight committees, the preparation of the schedule of assets, which is required for a review and an audit under the auditor controller's state-required mandated duties, is the treasurer. So I expect to be able to speak on this. I can give you the factual information on it, which I will right now because it is on the agenda. The March 25-25 should have been on here because it was completed, I believe, on March 2nd. It's not on here. I was not collaborated with that. That one was complete. It was delayed because the method of accounting was changed from the cash method to the accrual method. That delayed that along with the transition of the investment authority. For the fiscal year 25-26, we just received the engagement letter from the auditor controller, probably within the last month. We are working with him on the engagement letter. As you're aware, for audits and reviews, this is the review. It requires an engagement letter to identify, you both agree on what are the scope of the review. When I received the draft, I requested that the draft include all of the duties that I am to provide to the auditor controller in this report. Los Angeles has a very similar report they produce that I sent to the auditor controller. They produce two reports. One report is this required review, and there's the review standards they use, and the other report is the county of the cash and the reconciliation. So I have sent that back to them. I believe it was last week. So there is no progress until we get an engagement letter signed for us to deliver this. So I'm not sure why I didn't receive the engagement letter until just not that long ago. I'd have to look at the exact date, but I'm working as quickly as I can with my team to get that engagement letter correct with the information that I believe is appropriate for transparency for the board. We will then sign that letter, and at that point, we will do the September review, we will do the December review, and we will provide the March review. But we need to know the basis of accounting. In this case, there are some agreed-upon procedures, so there's attestation reports. We've got to go through the structure to make sure that we're providing the right information. And I appreciate the internal auditor has been working closely with us. We sent it back to them, and I believe that if they have questions, they will reach out to me. And I do agree it is delayed, but it is because I just received the engagement letter, and I'm working as quickly as possible to get these back up to speed and timely. So thank you. I'm available for any questions.
All right, excellent. I think that is the end of our agenda number or our investment oversight committee. Oh, I'm sorry, Yvonne.
I just want to say that from my observation, I think it's important that communication be improved so that we can get the right information without the mistakes and the errors and so forth. And I'm sure the public would appreciate the fact that you're working together. So that's just my thoughts on this, is the communication has got to be improved so that we don't have to spend an hour trying to get clarification on every other item. Okay. Thank you. And thank you all for the work that you're doing. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you for bearing with me.
All right, excellent. Well, thank you. So I think that concludes our investment oversight committee meeting. We'll pause just a minute if Dr. Bean, if you'd like to stay. Otherwise,
I tell you what, if it was as lively as the IOC, I should stay on the AOC. But I'm not. I'm going to go.
Excellent. Thank you all. You're more than welcome to stay. So our next item, we'll start our audit oversight committee items. Madam Clerk, if you can go ahead and proceed, please.
Yes, item 5 is to receive and file a report on required communication from external auditors, and we have David Showalter of Eide Bailey to present this item.
Good morning, Chair Johnson and members of the Audit Committee. My name is David Showalter with Eide Bailey, and we are presenting to you a status of the audits for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2025. In your packet, you should have, an agenda that kind of outlines what we'll discuss. The first item is the reference to the audit plan, which is attachment A. And this is providing just an overview of all the audits that we are required to perform under the engagement. And this status is indicating that all the audits have been completed through March 31st, 2026. The last item that was finished was the single audit and the HUD-REAC audit But during that quarter, we also finished the schedule of assets audit, the treasurer's schedule of assets audit, and also we finished a an audit with respect to the sheriff's jail grant. And then the more significant item that we did complete was the single audit. So that's an audit of the county's federal wards for June 30th, 2025. And in your handout, you should have a required communications letter that we provide to the board as well as to the audit committee. And this is just at the conclusion of the audit, we communicate certain items with respect to the with respect to our audit requirements, including the fact that one of the several items that we communicate is whether we had any difficulties with the audit, whether there were any disagreements, which we had none. The more important items that stand out in this letter. So with respect to the audit of the single audit, in this particular year, we had 18 major programs that we had to audit, which was significantly a larger amount than we've had in the past. Over the course of completing those audits, as a result, we had three of those programs that we issued qualified opinions over. And those were related to the Community Development Block Grant, the ELC grant, and the Homeland Security grant. So what that means is that there are various compliance requirements that we test for each of the major programs. And for these three programs, there was one compliance requirement for each where we could not provide assurance or give an opinion over compliance for those particular compliance requirements. And that's outlined in the letter on page four. You can see which programs and what were the compliance requirements that we had a qualification on. In addition, with respect to the audit, the single audit, we had four audit adjustments, and that's indicated on the letter as well, where we communicate uncorrected or corrected misstatements. And so those four audit adjustments were made to the CEFA, or the Schedule of Expenditures of Federal Wards. And why that's important is the Schedule of Expenditure of Federal Wards provides the basis for us determining what programs are going to be audited. And so if that isn't accurate, then there's a potential that we may not be selecting the correct program or may miss a program. So it's really important that that schedule is correct. And so there were four adjustments, and again, those are outlined on page three of our letter to you. And on attachment C on this particular item, we have a summary of the findings. And for this particular year, there were nine single audit findings as a result of our single audit. Four of those were considered material weaknesses, and the remaining are considered significant deficiencies. The first item, material weakness, has to do with the audit adjustments that were made to the CEFA. And because they were material to the schedule, our audit standards are basically going to tell us we need to communicate a control deficiency. There is a control deficiency that existed that caused that statement to be misstated. And so we're pointing that out in this finding number one. And then finding number two, finding number three, and finding number nine provide the detail behind why those particular programs had a compliance finding, and that compliance finding led to the qualification of the opinion with respect to those particular grants. And basically because of the number of exceptions that we had, or the fact that we were unable to audit certain aspects of compliance, resulted in the qualification of opinion. Any questions on anything related to the single audit report or the findings that I can help you answer?
Yeah, the only question I would have is from an internal audit standpoint, are we going to follow up on these findings, or
the external auditor follows up on their own.
But this is the next growth. Yeah, so this will be, since this is your last meeting and you've completed all of your audits, correct?
That's correct.
And so let me be the first to thank you for your service to the county. You've been here a while and you've done great work and great reports from my perspective.
Thank you.
This is the first time I've seen the uncorrected and the misstatements. Can someone explain how that happens in terms of, because it involves quite a bit of money. So can someone explain how the overstatements can happen?
I'll give you a high-level overview. The compilation of the CIFA, which is takes place in the Auditor Controller's office, is a collaboration where the county is putting together all the expenditures from the various departments. So when we get the CIFA, our responsibility is to go through and make sure that the amounts tie back to the underlying support. So basically rests back on the county to provide accurate and complete information on the CIFA. So where that could fail, I think in our particular finding would be in the sense of setting up policies and procedures to make sure the information that is communicated from the departments is being checked and verified back to the source document. And that can be on a sample basis or however that would look for the county. And in this case, we're doing the same thing from an audit perspective because there's an audit risk. We want to make sure, because we're also giving level of assurance over the schedule as well. So that would be a matter of increasing those internal controls and policies to make sure that, prior to us getting that schedule, someone has already gone through and checked and verified that information back to the source documentation, which is usually held at the department level.
I may also add to this. Many of the findings I saw, it was a confusion between cash versus accrual basis. So some people were reporting on cash basis. So what was received between July 1 and June 30th? Some were reporting on accrual basis, if I remember the findings right. And people had miscommunication on what was required for the CIFA. So nothing was recorded properly. It was just how it was reported back versus cash versus accrual.
And so that kind of goes back to procedure and the process of being, okay, thank you.
And going forward, the new ERP system, we're not going to be using Excel to track grants in the future. We're going to be using a ERP, Oracle, right? So all these transactions will be hopefully more of a hit of a button, right, in the new ERP and not like this very manual process that we're undertaking right now. So lots of great internal controls going forward.
Through the chair. Thank you. And I do want to just give a shout out to the Auditor Controller for bringing us into the modern century. Thank you.
And then on the summary of results with respect to the findings, there were two findings that were repeat findings. So kind of going back to the comment about who's following up on the findings. I really think it's our advice would be that would be something that would be developed internally to have someone reviewing these and going out and making sure that these are being followed through, because the time when the external auditor comes around to checking on these, it's going to be after the fact. And a lot of times where a finding might be reported in 1 year, because of the timing of when it was reported, there isn't enough time to implement corrective action, and so that finding carries over into the next year. And so communication of the finding is one thing, but also taking the corrective action timely so that it can be implemented prior to the end of the year is helpful, especially for external auditors, because it helps to reduce the risk that program may have to get reselected again. So
David, this is more findings than we've had in the past, isn't it?
I think going back and looking at last year, there were about the same number of findings. Yeah. And again, this year we had 18 programs that we audited, which is the highest that I think we've had.
Right. And so if we're doing that, and clearly we're having some repeat findings, then we do need to have somebody internally looking at this, would be my suggestion, that we have somebody looking at this, and this gets somehow gets on our agenda every quarter of these, that whether these findings are being resolved. So Aggie, is that a possibility to put it on our agenda? And I'm not sure how we're going to find the resources to do this, but I do think it's something we need to look at.
Yeah, the external auditor doesn't get back until
year later, so there should be someone from the county. COSO requires the department to self-monitor, right? So maybe even that could be done by the auditor controller. Our hands are full. You know, we have an item to talk about resources, and I'll talk about that later. But whatever the board and the AOC
Andrew,
wants.
Would you like that job?
COSO, you get self-monitoring goals, any findings, that kind of thing. So that
I defer to the. I'm not going to make a joke. Sorry. We are planning to in the next quarter, the next quarter's IOC AOC meeting to provide a 10-year trend of the findings, along with some more analytics. So that is our plan to do in the next quarter, with if we have the availability and staff to get that done.
So I'll just ask my question. Other than me talking at this meeting, whose responsibility is it going to be to follow up on this?
Responsibility, because I do follow up with the department when I see those single audit findings. I do review the report. I just want to point out, also it was mentioned, the two-year findings, because of the timing of the audits, usually the findings come out in March, and then the year ends in June, so you've already, now the next audit starts. So also if you have a finding, it likely will carry over to the next year, too, but I will take responsibility.
That would be great if you could make that an agenda item, and then you could come to us and say, that's been resolved, and that would be make me feel warm in the tummy.
Yes.
Like making you warm in the tummy.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
So just to get some clarity, where it says in the report in the table, you know, type of finding, material weakness or significant deficiency, but then question costs, none, or there's a number, mostly it's none, repeat finding, yes or no. For the compliance areas, I mean, how do we get the full report to show us, as an example, epidemiology and laboratory capacity for infectious disease? There was a material weakness. And how do we know what exactly is the material weakness?
My understanding was the full report was to be provided to you already. So, but I have the report in front of me if you want me to get into detail on that.
Okay. Does everyone have the full report?
It's a single audit report. It was distributed, I think, just last month, and it's online under the Auditor Controller's Office. It's called.
Okay. Okay. So.
It's part of our agenda packet.
Okay.
Did you need me to
it's
look
okay.
into that?
It's okay. I'll go dig
okay,
for it.
Thank you.
It just seems like we should probably have kind of a summary when we're doing these. So for the future. Because something distributed last month in an email, sorry. If we could, as part of the presentation in the future, just it would be nice to know, other than just this little table, you know, what is the problem we need to solve? So for the housing voucher cluster, for example, it lists significant deficiency. I'd like to know. And I'd like us to discuss at this meeting, what is the problem that needed to be resolved? Did we resolve it already? And what do we need to do if not? Okay. Because we had another report that we got at the board level saying that our housing voucher program had no deficiencies. So I'm confused. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, and the report has the detail of all the findings and the explanation behind it. So I think for this meeting, we didn't want to bore you with going through all the details of the findings, but I think that's why we decided to put this schedule together, just to provide some high level overview of all the findings and then which compliance requirements that they pertain to. Okay.
All right. Excellent.
Any other questions on the single audit? And then the last item we have on the item is our required communications with respect to the audit of the schedule of assets held in the county treasury, which that report was issued in January 30th, 2026. So during that three-month period, we issued that report as well. And this letter is just our required communications, just indicating the fact that we did not have any difficulties with the audit, there were no disagreements, and there were no misstatements, and that report, which I may have communicated in the last meeting, was a clean opinion on that particular report. So, and I'd like to take the opportunity also thank the committee and the county for the opportunity to work with you over these last few years, and I really appreciated the certainly a challenge working with you guys. We worked through a lot of important things, I think, and also just really appreciated your feedback and the professionalism of this committee, and definitely keeps everybody on their toes, which I appreciate that as well, and wish you all the best in the future. So thank you.
Well, Mark was the first to thank you, but hopefully I won't be the last, but I'll be the next. So thank you very much. And next on our agenda is number...
I did just have one thing. You know, that we finished the annual report, and most of us got a huge copy of it. And we normally have a special meeting to go over that. Has that been scheduled yet, or if I missed that? I guess the answer is no. So we probably should schedule the special meeting to review where we review the financials of the.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mark. Yeah, yes, we'll get on that. We'll work with Valerie. Valerie's now there.
Yeah. Okay. Just she might not know, and so just wanted a reminder.
Do I think it's the third quarter we do it? But yeah, it'll be on that.
Thank you.
I believe
it's in September.
Yeah. Once the CAFRs release, shortly.
Yes, excellent.
And Chair Johnson, I just wanted to thank my team for the clean audit that they did. We changed from the cash method of accounting to the modified accrual. This was the second year. The first one was quite delayed. I just wanted to thank my team. They did a great job. And also thank Ide Bailey. I know that as they are moving off, they worked very closely with us. It was a great relationship. And thank you for all of your team and time to do that. And pass along my thanks along with the chair to the time that you spent with us, because, of course, you did a lot of our audits. Thank you.
All right, excellent. I think our next is number six.
Item six is to approve the Internal Audit Department quarterly status report, including performance audits, and approve executive summary of internal audit reports for quarter ended March 31st, 2026. And we have Jose Olivo, Deputy Director of Internal Audit Department, to present this item.
Good afternoon. I'll try to be brief. Before you is our report on internal audit activity for the quarter ending March 31st, 2026. This quarter, internal audit issued 7 final reports. This included 3 original audit reports and 4 follow-up reports. Of the 3 original audit reports, I'd like to highlight one, which was the first phase of the forensic audit of county contracts, which was directed by the Board of Supervisors. This audit had 6 findings and recommendations. The forensic auditor reviewed 145 contracts worth over $486 million as part of this first phase and presented their results to the board at their March 24th public meeting. Phase 2 of the audit is now underway, and that includes a review of 681 contracts totaling $1.7 billion. We issued 4 follow-up reports, and one of the 4 follow-ups was the OCCR Dana Point Harbor Public-Private Partnership Lease Agreement. All recommendations were implemented, so we closed out that audit. The other 3 follow-ups have outstanding recommendations, but we will be going back for a second follow-up and reporting back to your committee on the status of their corrective action. The only other thing I wanted to point out is at the very end, which is attachment C, is our quarterly status report, and this lists all the audits we have scheduled for the fiscal year. And just wanted to share that we updated this schedule with the changes to the audit plan approved by the board at the March 26th public meeting, which were based on recommendations that MGO made during their independent risk assessment. One other job that's listed in here, which was a Mental Health Services Act performance audit. There were significant changes imposed by the state to that program, So we decided to defer the audit till next fiscal year until those changes have been effective and put in place. We did communicate with the HTA director on these changes. Apparently, they're really significant. So we thought it would be best to make sure that those changes are fully in place before we go out and audit. And that concludes my presentation.
All right. Do we have any questions or comments?
I just had one real quick question. The forensic audit was very thorough and wonderful. My question for you is, as you look across those recommendations, which ones do you think should be highest priority, and which ones do you think will have the biggest impact both on District 1 and the county as a whole?
So one thing to note is that, you know, they were all significant issues and good recommendations. The audit was of a period of time that dates back to 2019. The board has made a lot of improvements in this area. A lot of initiatives have been implemented. And we've also conducted audits in this area, and we're following up on those audits to report back on the corrective action. So I believe a lot of them are important. Most of them are important. And we did receive some feedback from the CEO that many of them have already been implemented, but, you know, we haven't, internal audit hasn't actually verified or reviewed that information. So our plan is to report back on all these audits that we've conducted, including this one. And so be aware of the corrective action status.
Yeah, so Jason, for all of our audits, we conduct follow-ups to ensure that they implement our recommendations. Even though this wasn't contracted out, the board has asked us to also follow up. And consistent with our audit of ARPA, which was also a board order, we'll be following up. So we'll be reporting back to this committee what the implementation status is of every recommendation.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Well, I have
a question.
Yes.
So as far as the auditing goes, so all of the board office audit, the contracts since 2019 have been completed, and as indicated in this report, we identified even other District 1, Supervisor Doe, District 1 violations, I'll call it. And so the 360 health, do we have a status on where we are in terms of the further investigation into that?
Yes, we do. We work closely with the forensic auditor, and they have already reached out, and you know, the board had specific instructions on what they wanted to do to report back, and they've been doing that and meeting with them, and you know, that'll be part of the phase two report back. It'll include 360, and there was questions about a few other contractors. That'll all be part of the phase two report back.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and I think this is an approval item, is that right?
Yes.
So I'd entertain a motion to
I shall move.
Approve. Thank you. And a second. Thank you. And all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Perfect. So the motion carries. And next item is number 7.
Item 7 is to approve external audit activity quarterly status report for quarter ended March 31st, 2026, and receive and file report on the status of external audit recommendations implementation. And we have Aggie Alonso, Internal Audit Director, to present this item.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Clerk Sanchez. I'll make this really quick. As you know, we report back on all the external audits. We're just reporting what the departments gave us, but it's to ensure that the committee's aware of audits that aren't being conducted by us. For this quarter ending March 31st, 2026, 16 completed external audits were done. The only significant or material weaknesses identified in any of those audits were the single audit that were already covered by Ide Bailey earlier in the presentation. I do have some details for anyone that's interested. Vice Chair Foley, the epidemiology laboratory capacity, the expenditures were overstated by $486,000. And also, the property records were not properly maintained. So those were the two things that led to that
that one. I think you had a specific question, so I just wanted to address it.
Thank you, through the chair. And that is an overstatement of the expenditures. Was that, do you know if that was based on this cash versus accrual
that
method?
That we'd have to ask the auditor. David still around? I think he might have already left.
Okay.
Because we, those, their okay. audits, yeah.
All right. And when you say overstated, that means they documented in their Excel spreadsheet 400 and something thousand more than what was actually expended. And that may or may not be because of the difference in the way that they were identifying where the fund, what year the funds were in. Okay, thank you.
And that concludes the presentation for external audit activity.
I think there was somebody back there who wanted to answer the question.
HCA is here for...
Oh, yeah, we bring the department if...
Hi, board and committee members. My name is Cindy Wong. I'm the audit controller, healthcare agency accounting manager. And the $456,000 overstatement, correct, it was a accounting method. So we reported it on a cash basis instead of an accrual to match with the AFRA.
Okay, so when was that included in the Ide Bailey report? Do we, okay. And then as it relates to someone here from housing, do we know what happened with the housing voucher issue?
I have that information. Okay. And they are here. We invited everyone because.
Okay. Great.
When there's.
Can you explain? Hi, Julia.
Yeah, I'll let them speak. I don't.
I'm going to defer to January Johnson, our housing authority manager.
You want to come up to the microphone?
Hello, January Johnson, housing, Orange County Housing Authority housing manager. This one is an administrative finding, so they pulled 60 inspections. Of those 60 inspections, one of the inspections you're required to re-inspect if you have a failure within a certain period of time. This particular one, we inspected, the person was moving, but they ended up not moving, and so they missed their appointment, and that was merely what it is. There's no financial cost. It's just an administrative timing error, and...
Okay. Because it's listed, okay, so housing quality standards enforcement. That's
correct.
What that relates
so
to.
Okay. There was a no-show. We were supposed to send a notice at a certain period of time, but the person was moving. They didn't move.
Okay.
And so it was an overlap. But in an effort to make sure that doesn't happen again, we've updated our procedures to make sure that all of those instances are reviewed by supervisor staff.
Okay. Is there, since we're on this, through the chair, is it okay? Is there someone here from the Refugee and Entrant Assistant State Replacement Designee Administered Programs?
Hi, good afternoon. Jay Wong, Social Services Agency.
There was a finding of eligibility and allowable costs. Could you explain?
Yes. So with that finding, we have been taken over the past couple of years, corrective action. Some of this has taken time since the prior audit to implement things like staff monitoring, compliance monitoring, updating of our
well, before we get
policies
to that,
and procedures.
What was the violation or what was the problem?
Hi, Rosa Palacios, Human Services Manager. The issue was that in out of 60 cases, 3 cases were noted for not being determined properly eligibility. For one of the cases, the individuals were not eligible to the refugee cash assistance. They were eligible instead to CalWORKs, the TANF assistance program. The other case was that the individual did not enroll into the employment services program as they are mandated within 30 days. And the last issue was that the individual was not within the categories of that, within the refugee categories eligible to the program itself.
Okay. And so what is the corrective action we're taking?
The corrective action that we're taking is we have updated our policies and procedures. We have also updated our checklist for our staff, and we've included case reviews. on these.
And then have we done additional training so that doesn't happen?
Yes, we have.
Okay, great. Thank you. Very helpful. And then the block grants for community mental health services. Someone here on that? Would that be HCA again? No? HIV emergency relief project grants, the Ryan White grants. Is somebody here for HCA that can speak to those? And WIC probably too, because you're, it's probably all the same.
Good morning, committee members. Juan Corral, County Procurement Office. These findings are related to the procurement and contract monitoring process or activities. I am happy to report that in both cases, the corrective action plans have been implemented and are on target to be completed by the end of June this year.
Okay, and what was the problem?
Let me get to this one first. So the first finding, number six, was related to the identification or inclusion of subrecipient required elements on the contract itself. So the corrective action is to coordinate with stakeholders to ensure that all those elements are captured, and when they're not, to complete either notification letters or amendments to make sure that the subrecipients have awareness as to them being a subrecipient and what those requirements are.
Okay. So that's for the block grants?
Yes.
And then for the HIV, the Ryan White program?
For the HIV Ryan White program, it was a requirement of specific provisions that are related to federal uniform guidance. So it's related to the Clean Air and Clean Water Act. So those provisions have now been included as part of our standard provision requirements in our contracts.
So it's just a contract?
Correct.
Like the template wasn't correct. Updated? Okay. And then the WIC program, what was the issue there?
The WIC, I believe it was.
Good afternoon. Cindy Wong, Auditor Controller, Healthcare Agency Accounting. For the WIC program, we had an instance of an employee self-approving their timesheet. We found a glitch in the OC time system, and we have been working with the vendor to get that item resolved and fixed, so that issue will no longer present itself. And we also incorporated additional reviews in our audit process to catch those.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, one more. Homeland Security. Is there someone here from the Sheriff's Department? Or anyone who could speak to this item? Can you speak to it?
Oh, for the sheriff one, what I have.
He was a cash accrual.
It says sub-recipient monitoring.
Overstated by 2.6 million are my notes for OCSD. Oh, you're talking about the Homeland Security Grant Program?
Right.
Expenditure amount was overstated by 715,000.
Okay.
And I don't have the details. We did invite sheriff, but I
okay. Yeah. What is sub-recipient monitoring, though? That's what the compliance area was.
Yeah, so you're monitoring your contractor. So you get the county gets the funding, and then you contract it out. Like what we did with ARPA and like other things, we contract out.
I messaged somebody from the sheriff department to come back.
It's okay. They don't need to do that. It's so long as we just know what it is. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Excellent. Any other? I think this is an approval item also, so I would entertain a motion.
I so move.
Before we vote, is there another item?
Yes, Chair Johnson. I just wanted to identify for transparency purposes, there is the annual compliance audit, which was under Code Section 27134, is mandated for fiscal year 23-24, is still outstanding. It had been previously delayed to have other reviews done from 25 and 26. We did receive the draft report from the external auditor, Brown Armstrong, and our original date was October 31st. Then we moved it to, we thought we'd be finished by March 31st, and it is still outstanding. I do expect that they have our input on it, and we should get that resolved, hopefully, in the next 30 days. But I did want to make sure on the record that it is delayed, because we're now in May of 2026, and the report is from fiscal year 23-24. Thank you.
All right, excellent. So we have a motion. Do I have a second? Thank you, Larry.
And just for clarification, this is agenda item number 7, correct?
This is number 7.
It looks like the recommended action for 7 might be carried over from number 6, at least in my packet.
Yeah, I don't recall this one being approved.
I think what he's saying, sorry, Mr. Chairman,
is that in the agenda report, it says the recommended action is to approve the executive summary of internal audit reports for quarter ended March 31st, 2026. Is that the right action?
7 is the external, and then 6 is the internal.
Right. So what
internal was six.
What I think saying is that it should say external.
I'm seeing external on my copy, but
for item 7,
approve
internal audit. You're at the very thing under recommended actions is approve internal audit department's quarterly stat. I think you're saying it that needs to be external
in the memo itself.
The internal audit department.
Yeah, it's the internal audit department, but the external.
I'm just. Yeah. The auditor controller has raised this.
Yeah. just okay. Trying so to clarify do we need what to clarify saying. What we're approving then? Let's just do that. We are approving. What are we approving here? Thank you.
Right. So item 7 is for the external audit activity quarterly report.
And before we approve that. Director Alonzo, on the next meeting for there were several departments on here that didn't have dates last audited. It didn't indicate whether or not there was an audit in process or completed. Can we have those updated for the next meeting?
Yeah, we'll do the best we can. This is us just compiling information, recording what they give us. It requires a lot of follow-up, and sometimes departments don't get us all the information. That's why you see those blanks. But we'll do the best we can to keep getting that information, ensure it's as complete. We also want to revamp this report to make it more user-friendly. And, you know, I'll be meeting with the chair and vice chair, so we'll hopefully have a better product that's more understandable and hopefully easier for the departments to complete, and so we can get all the information.
Okay, in terms of when audits are due, whether it's every 2 years annually.
You're talking about the external audit report.
I'm talking about the external.
Yeah, that's all coming from the department. So we're just taking the information they give us and putting it in a format to ensure that the committee's aware of any findings significant and that corrective action's being taken. So we'll certainly work to try to get all that information. I'm just saying it's difficult sometimes, and we have deadlines, and we don't get it in time. That's why you see it blank.
Do you believe concerned, though, if an area hasn't been audited for several years?
Yeah, depending on what it is, if it's mandated. I mean, there's always, it depends on the day. But I would, anything that's delayed or, we can certainly maybe start reporting on stuff like that, ask departments if anything, because right now we're just capturing, significant material stuff and ensuring that there's corrective action and those things don't fall through the cracks. But in terms of audits that are delayed, without that key information you're asking for, you wouldn't really know, but we can make that maybe part of the request we make out to departments, and so we could provide that information to you all.
Okay, just for an example, clerk of the board, no audit in process, audit period frequency every 2 years, but there's no date when it was last audited, just for example.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to, in person with Valerie.
Can I help?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, so
I agree with Ms. Rowden. I think that what she's asking for is where, and I don't think this requires you to get any information from the other departments, where it says last time it was, I'm sorry, that every 2 years it's required, she's just asking that you include when was the last audit.
Yes, we'd have to get that from the department. We don't have
to. Okay. Okay, so I guess we'll just put a blanket out there that all the departments, if asked that question, should send it over. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, you can't blame them. You got to follow up and get the information so we can have it.
Just still doesn't.
Okay.
Okay, sure. Madam Clerk, if you could maybe read the what we'd be approving once more, please.
Right. So this is for the approval of the external audit activity quarterly status report for the quarter ended March 31st, 2026. And then it's receive and file the report on the status of the recommendations implementation.
All right. Excellent. Can I get a motion to approve, please?
We actually already had a motion and a second.
Okay. So where are you? So we have motion and motion and second, the actual motion.
The actual vote
okay,
is next.
Okay. Very good. All right. So now let's go ahead and vote aye, if everyone in favor of aye. Aye. Opposed. All right. This motion carries. And we will put number 7 done. And on to number 8.
Item 8 is to receive update on internal audit staffing and resources, and Aggie Alonso from Internal Audit Director will present this item.
Thank you, Chair. Madam Clerk, I'll start with the good news. Last Audit Oversight Committee, we reported we had 2 vacancies. Since then, we filled one, and I'm proud to announce the well-deserved promotion of Ms. Gabriela Cabrera. If you could please stand the fiscal manager. She is our new fiscal manager, and she will be conducting complex internal control, information technology, and performance audits. That's the good news. In terms of staffing, we currently have 15 FTE, and we still have 2 vacancies because even though we promoted Ms. Cabrera, it opened up her previous positions vacancy. So the 2 vacancies that we currently have, one is at the assistant deputy director, and we conducted interviews this last week, and we hope to have the position filled by next month. And I did want to mention that as part of the current county's budget situation, every position gets frozen, and we have to go through a process with the CEO to get the positions unfrozen. And I just wanted to thank the CEO for allowing us to unfreeze these positions and fill them and ensure we have our department fully staffed. So we do appreciate that. So yes, assistant. And then the second one is the business services administrator. That was Ms. Cabrera's old position, and this person reports directly to executive management and handles all the administrative functions for our department. So the CEO also approved our unfreeze for that, and we're starting the recruitment process, and we'll be able to fill that. In terms of resources and the completion of our audit plan, as I mentioned at the last AOC, because of the vacancies and a significant number of maternity leaves, we have had less hours available to conduct the hours in our audit plan. So we have approximately 3,000 less hours than what the audit plan was based on for 25-26. Unfortunately, for 26-27, it's going to even be worse because, if you recall, the contracted out risk assessment and audit plan that MGO produced, it's based on 5,000 hours more than we actually had. So our deficit going into next year is going to be, we won't have 8,000 hours available to do all the audits in the plan. So we're going to have to, the impact is going to be, we're going to have to defer some audits into future years. Of course, we're also doing other things. You know, we're trying to be more efficient in areas where we know that a system is going to be part of the new ERP. We limit those reviews to security reviews, not looking at the full system, because of course it's going to be part of the new better ERP system. You know, we're doing everything we can to be as efficient as possible, but we don't have the resource. So what we did as part of the fiscal year 26-27 budget cycle, we requested 5 additional positions. Unfortunately, with the way the current budget is, we did not get those approved, but we will continue to work with the CEO and utilize every strategy we can to audit based on risk. We'll continue to triage our audit plan and continue to report back on any gaps that we may have as requested. So that's my...
So, Aggie, we're in a position where we spent some money to do an external risk assessment. And in that, it really put us where we need to, they told us we need to spend 8,000 more hours a year than we are, and we're down 5 people. So if we look at that, if you've got 15 staff and we're talking about 5 more, you're handicapped about 20%. Is that, depending on how you look at it, 20% or 30%, depending on how you divide the 5. We're 20 or 25% of our presumed capacity that we should have according to the risk assessment that was done by an outside agency. Am I thinking correctly there?
Yeah, we have 8,000 less hours to complete high-risk audits.
Yeah, and that's about 5 people when it...
Well, if you just take 2,000 productive work hours, you know, that's four people.
It's probably 1,500, you know, if we're talking audit hours.
Utilization rate, yeah, you're talking about 5 people, yeah.
5 people.
And that's why we requested.
So we should just let the board know that we can't meet what the outside risk assessment agency has suggested we do.
Right, and that's what we do in our reports back and our briefings.
Thank you.
Yes, so Ms. Roden.
Those 8,000 hours. Does that include the hours given to the external auditors that we have had help with the audits?
Well, most of that, like, I think you're talking about, like, the forensic audit, and, yeah, most of the heavy lifting on those audits have been done by executive management. So our hours aren't captured as part of, normal audit plan executives or overhead, right? And also the very talented Ms. Cabrera, who was an admin. We've been, although doing a lot of work on it, that hasn't impacted the actual auditors as much, if that makes sense. But of course it has, because, we take resources to assist with that, especially with ARPA. With the forensic audit, but ARPA was all completed in-house. And if you recall, last year, I know you've been around, we were in a deficit because we had to take a bunch of hours from our audit plan to do the ARPA, the very much necessary, ARPA audit. And we did it in 2 phases. And I hope that answers your question.
Sort of.
Okay.
So the you were saying we turned a lot of the audits over to private auditors or outside auditors. So I was just asking, those hours that you're talking about, do that come out of your hours?
Oh, no. So for example, we've contracted out more audits than we ever have. I was focusing on the bigger ones. I think you're talking about the smaller ones, like Dana Point and some of those. And those hours, very minimal on our end. We write the statement of work, and then we just monitor it. So we budget those at maybe 100 hours or 50 hours, depending on the complexity. The forensic was different, and I apologize for not. But yeah, no, those aren't impacting our, but it impacts our funding, and we have limited funding for those types of audits. Thank you. Apologies for not understanding. Any other questions?
Right, any other questions? All right, next.
Item 9 is to receive and file the quarterly status report of auditor controller mandated audits for quarter ended March 31st, 2026. And we have Rodrigo Martinez, audit manager with auditor controller's office, to present on this item.
Good afternoon, committee. My name is Rodrigo. I'm going to go over the status on mandated audits. So the first piece is the cash shortages. We received 11 cash shortages, and all 11 has been completed as of today. So we have none outstanding. The next line item is the collections of financial statements for JPAs and special districts. So we're currently tracking one older one from 2023-2024. So this one, they've been working on the financial statements. We reached out, try to reach out every month. The last update that we have was, it's in the wraps, so it's going to be completed soon and presented to the board, to their board, on May 20th or June 17th. So one of those. So we're hoping to have that provided to us so we could close this item. The next item is the review of schedule of assets. We completed and issued March 31st, 2025, on April 2nd, 2026. And there were no issues identified. We also started to work on the next two quarterly assets, which is September 2025 and December 2025. And I will pause to see if anyone has any questions.
Thank you very much. And next item is number 10.
Item 10 is to receive update on ERP implementation, and we have Andrew Hamilton, Auditor Controller, to present the update.
Good afternoon, committee. The ERP is still on track for a successful completion. I have three quick updates. The budgeting module is scheduled to go live in the next 45 days, July 1st. GL financial procurement, that whole group of modules is scheduled next to go live a year later, July 1st, 2027. And lastly, the OC Superior Court decided to join our implementation. So just wanted to give a quick update to the committee. That completes my comments.
And so, Andrew, can you give me the date we'll have the last Excel spreadsheet being used in accounting? What would be that date?
You know, I would love that date to come sooner. However, I don't think we'll ever get rid of Excel spreadsheets at the county, but we want to reduce as much as we can those shadow systems.
But the date that this should be fully implemented is...
Oh, okay. So that is January 1st of 2028 when HR payroll is scheduled to go live.
And we started this process in March of 2020, just to be clear.
Okay, and I think item number 11.
So, all right, I'm sorry.
Item 11 is to receive and file County IT Projects Quarterly Progress Report, and we have Casey Rustenberg, County Chief Information Officer, to present this item.
Good afternoon. I'll make this quick. I know we're running late. This is the quarterly report on IT projects that are in value of $150,000 or more. I won't go through each of the slides. I'll just give you a quick recap if that's okay. So we have 10 active projects, two more than the last reporting period. No projects were scheduled to be completed during this past period, which is January, February, March of 2026. The total portfolio increased, budget portfolio increased from $106.4 million to $111.83 million. The two new added projects were that we're gonna do our best to get away from phone handsets to soft phones. So we're moving well along that project line. We got to get rid of 16,000 handsets. If we can do 80%, I'll be very happy. That project's moving forward. Also, the DA's had a very old case management system that was awarded to a vendor to start taking that legacy case management system and putting it in a what we call a cloud-based system. There are two projects that are behind schedule. One of them is multi-factor authentication. This is where we're trying to get everybody in the county to not just use passwords to get into systems, but also use a badge or a cell phone as a second identity. We ran into some budget issues with some of the agencies because they didn't have the budget to buy the devices, and in some cases we had to upgrade their badges, but we're working with those agencies to resolve those issues. And then the one that's been on here for a while is the sheriff's project to renovate their automated jail system. They're taking another tact. Looks like they're looking to internally develop that, and they're making some progress. I was in a meeting recently, and they're looking to get one of the first modules launched sometime in June, July of this year. If I may add, there are two other initiatives that I think is interesting because I know we have a lot of accountants in this room. There were two development projects that OCIT took on over the last couple of years. One of them, you may recall, we awarded a very large contract to IBM for the care case management application. That became cost prohibitive. We told IBM thank you, but no, we developed that internally. That's been running now for almost a year. And we are working with the County of San Bernardino. They're very interested in purchasing that application from Orange County. And I have a high degree of certainty that that'll happen. Similarly, last month, we launched our internally developed OC agenda management system. We had a very old agenda management system that's launched. And we have at least 10 counties that are interested in working with us to possibly purchase those applications as well. So that's my report. Any questions?
You know, and all these other things, we have findings, and is there, which project do you think that's out there right now is the most critical that's going on in the county?
Sorry, Andrew. it makes up half the portfolio value. It's huge. Anytime you do an ERP, you touch so many things. I was joking with Andrew. This isn't just moving cheese. You're changing the cheese. It's a totally different cheese in 21 different business sectors. It's very complex.
Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Do we have any further items on this? If not, I think we are at the end of our meeting. So this concludes the meeting of the Investment Oversight and Audit Oversight Committees, and we're adjourned at 12:47. Next regular meeting will be Thursday, August 13th at 10:30 a.m. Thanks, everyone.